Ben Melech, in leaving, the reason why he left Eretz Yisrael is because he was very wealthy, and the defect that he had was the Tzarayim. He faced a crisis. He was a Gadol Hador. He was a great person, and we said that it's interesting that a person can sometimes be a great person and still have hidden defects which he never has to confront, and sometimes the situation itself is significant. The person can go through life that's, I guess, mazel. They can simply be fortunate, and then we say that v'lo al yedei nisyonos. We pray that God should not confront us with nisyonos, with trials, so to speak. Because you'll say, but if you're perfected, so then you won't be broken by the trial. And if you're not perfected, so then what difference does it make? The answer is, there is a difference that certain situations can confront a person with a challenge. Were he not to be in that situation, I mean, a lot of people. That's why you have to be very careful in the choices that you make, where you go, or who you decide to be with. All these, most of the situations that a person gets involved in life, are not as simple as he would think. You have to take into consideration all of the consequences. And it's interesting, it ties in with the story we did about that chassid the other day. That adds a new element to that story about the chassid who woke up on Shabbos, his fence was broken, and he forgot that it was Shabbos, and he was going to fix it, and then he remembered that it was Shabbos, and he penalized himself. He left it he wouldn't fix the fence permanently, as a reminder. So we said that the greatness over there was that, in spite of the fact that he avoided the danger at the last moment, most people would breathe a sigh of relief and say, "Ah, you see, I was mecham." So they would take that as a tribute to their greatness, that I'm not mechal Shabbos. But no, he saw, even though he could have denied it, he used that as an opportunity to really investigate a hidden defect. He saw, in other words, until that he was a chassid, he was a righteous person, but he had a hidden defect, and that his energies weren't properly directed towards the positive experience of Shabbos. So this is the tragedy of someone who had a defect, which until that point in time had not created any kind of a problem. But now he was confronted with this crisis, and he couldn't deal with it, so he left Eretz Yisrael. And, as we said, now I wanted to say that in doing that, it wasn't just an expression of the defect, but that act itself was an act of injustice. I think that's a key element in the story over here. Chesed, compassion, and justice, the two are interrelated, as we will see. Because he was lacking, of course, in compassion, but there was a very serious injustice in leaving Eretz Yisrael for selfish reasons, because it was a lack of hakaras hatov. It was a person has to it's a very significant idea. There are certain things that people simply take for granted. As we said, they always complaining about the given situations. People like to complain about the school that they're going to, or as I said, about their family, or about the country they live in the systems. And there's nothing wrong. I mean, a person has a right to criticize. But there's a tremendous failure. They just there's an attitude of taking it for granted as though I have it coming to me, and there's a failure to recognize that if it wasn't for all the efforts that certain people made, you would have nothing. I mean, who are you? So that you too have a chiyuv of hakaras hatov. And here, by leaving Eretz Yisrael, that was a negation of the whole concept of Eretz Yisrael. He's negating Eretz Yisrael. Who would you be? All right, so you're going to lose your money? So what? But there's more to life than that. All of the things that truly count, you wouldn't have had unless there was an Eretz Yisrael. So how can you leave it? You have a chiyuv to maintain it. That's the whole chiyuv of hakaras hatov. You have a chiyuv to maintain it because you benefited from it. So he was guilty on that score as well, in my opinion. And as we see, the psukim seem to indicate that he miscalculated. When a person is not acting rationally, he miscalculates. He miscalculated, and he originally went just logur, just to sojourn. But then vayiyusham, then he remained there. And the most serious miscalculation, though, I would say, it never occurred to him that he'd have any problem with regard to his two sons. His two sons married Moaviyot. I mean, as we were learning according to Rashi, they were Nachriyos. So that's a serious thing. And they lost their lives. So everything, he lost everything. But I don't think that he ever thought that this would happen, that he calculated that, because he was fixated on that one thing. He couldn't calculate all the consequences because of that defect, because this fear of being overwhelmed and losing his fortune was so great that it forced him to act in an irrational way. And in the end, he suffered. In a sense, it's like a mida keneged mida here. He thought he could survive without Eretz Yisrael, and but once he left Eretz Yisrael, he wasn't the same person, and his sons weren't the same. Apparently, he thought that they were on a high enough level that they would not succumb to the influences of Chutz La'aretz. But it's not the case. So, the beginning of the story, this is a problem. This is a problem because it is a bit ambivalent. Usually, we look at these things, you know, in a more black and white kind of a way. What they did is wrong. It's an aveira, and it's a serious aveira. Intermarriage is not something to be taken lightly. So, on the one hand, they committed something which is a very, very serious aveira. On the other hand, you're going to say, yeah, but look at the results. Well, you can't justify something by the results. Now, you're saying, but you see that they weren't entirely corrupt, because they didn't just marry anybody. They married, at least in the case of Rus, and seemingly in the case of Arpa. Arpa was not on the same level. We'll see the difference between the two. These people were on a high level. Okay. That point is important, but what to do with that point is sort of left in between now. So what are we going to say? So therefore, it wasn't just a terrible thing, and therefore we're going to say that that intermarriage is bad only depending now upon the quality or the level of the person. That's not the case. That is not the case. Okay. On the other hand, we do see that Ruth was a one of the greatest women in our history. So let's leave that point in abeyance. It's a tough point. Bad question. I'm learning in accordance with Rashi, and Rashi's following Chazal, and it's very hard to learn the story any other way. And that is to say that when they married them, they were not converted. If you're going to say that they were converted, you can have the problem, because the whole story over here, we learn out all the laws and concepts of conversion from the story, and the conversion takes place afterwards. Let me just proceed. That's what we're going to take up today. So let me proceed a little bit, okay? So what happens afterwards? Let's continue inside the story. So it says they married here in Dalet. Vayisu lahem noshim moavios. And they married noshim moavios. No mention of conversion. But later on when Boaz redeems the field and so on and so forth, he refers to retaining the name, the idea of retaining the name of Machlon, right? Oh, Rus is Ashes Machlon. He does refer. The story, of course, is there is no true Yibum. There is no true Yibum. It's just a philosophical concept. Yeah. Now, the story over here, they married them. This is describing an event. We would say the same thing today. He went off and he married a Gentile. But you'll say, but technically there is no marriage. Of course. But one second, if there's technically no marriage, then how do you violate the Yisr? Yeah. Right? So there must be something. How can you violate the Yisr if there's no marriage? Well, the answer to that is, that's the question. Okay. No, that's not true. Excuse me. The prohibition of intermarriage is not the same, identical with having sexual relations with the Gentile. If a person did have sexual relations with the Gentile, they did not violate Lo tischateima. They did not. It means to set up. The Torah does recognize a framework that even without kiddushin, there's no kiddushin. So if he gives you a ring, it's meaningless. But if he lives together as man and wife, and that includes sexual relations, because that's one of the components. If they set up a marital situation, they live together as man and wife, then they are over on Lo tischateima. If they don't, for example, like it's an act of prostitution or something like that, then that's a separate violation. That's a separate issue, but it is not considered to be intermarriage. Okay? So the Torah can therefore speak about marriage over here. It's a different kind of marriage. It doesn't require a get, but it's a marriage, a forbidden marriage. Now, they married Moabite women. The name of one of them was Arpa. And the name of the other one was Rus. And they stayed there Ke'eser Shanim, about 10 years. Then it says that both of them died. Both husbands died. Okay. It would seem that if it wasn't unrelated, it seemed it's related to their Avera, to their sin. And the woman remained, Vatishar Isha Mishnei Yeladeha Umeisha. And she remained alone. She was alone from her, she had lost her husband and her two sons. Then it says, then something strange, of course, occurs. Because, as you know, at this point in time, the famine ends, and she wants to return to Israel. But this is something completely unexpected. Then she and her daughters-in-law got up and returned from the field of Moab. For she had heard in the fields of Moab that God had remembered his nation to give them bread. Okay, so apparently, as we learned last week, that the famine was a punishment for the corruption of the time, and the Jews had done tshuva, and God had forgiven them. God had remembered them, and now the famine was over. All right? So they went from the place, she went from the place where she had been, and her two daughters-in-law were with her. That's strange. What are they doing with her? And they traveled on the road to return to the land of Yehuda. To return to the land of Yehuda. Now, this is an indication that both girls, see, at the outset, both girls returned with her. We'll see clear, both girls wanted to convert. That was their objective. Vatomer Nami Lishtei Chaloseh. So Nami now said to both of her daughters-in-law, Lechna Shovna, go and return. Isha Leveis Ima, each one of you to your mother's house. Yas Arushem Imachem Chesed, may God do chesed, compassion, with you, kasher asisem mamesim v'imodi, as you have done with the deceased and with me. This is very interesting. She introduces her to the concept of compassion. And there's two kinds of compassion. She clearly makes a distinction between the compassion you did with me, and on the surface, I would say, it means that she was now a widow, and without children in a strange land, and these girls didn't abandon her, they stayed with her, which is, you know, after their husbands had died, you would assume they'd go back to their normal lives. Now they did chesed with her, but she also introduces them to the concept of chesed with the mason. We'll come back to that. It's a very important theme in the whole book of Rus. But what you see from this is that these girls, at this point in time, Chazal point out that she's doing what you're supposed to do. When a person comes to convert, you're supposed to discourage him. In fact, Chazal say that there is this Shovna. She says, go back. She says that three times. So Chazal say, Amar Reb Chanina, Begil Makomos Kasav Kan Shovna. Shovna, Shovna. Three times. Kineged Gimel Pa'amim Shedochin. See, we learn Hilchas Geros. Geros from here. See, that strengthens my point that you're talking at this point in time they hadn't converted. Now they were coming to convert because they wanted to go back with Rus. So they're going to go back with Rus. They're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. They have to be Jewish. So they wanted to link their faith with that of Naomi. With that of Naomi. And she discourages them. Keneged Gimel Pamim. This is in accordance with the three times. Shedochen es Ager. You're supposed to push aside the convert, the would-be convert. But if the person keeps on persisting, then we accept him. That's one of the ideas that I want to address. What is our philosophy with regard to conversion? What is the philosophy? I mean, it seems like there are two opposites. You begin with discouragement. First, you're obligated to discourage. Then there comes a point in time where it's forbidden to discourage. It's not just that you stop, but you're not allowed to discourage, because that's, where do we see the second idea, where it's forbidden to discourage? Vatechta. Exactly, the Rambam quotes that. That it's not just describing what we're going to. It's not just describing what takes place. It's in Yudches. It's Yudches. Vatever. This is, we're going to go through the psukim. But at the end of this whole process, there's a very interesting dialogue over here. At the end of this whole dialogue, it says she saw that misametesi lalefes, that she was extremely determined. She was forceful. She was totally determined to go with her. So she ceased. But that vatechtol is very important. The Rambam quotes it as halacha, that there comes a point where you're not allowed to discourage. But I mean, what's the underlying concept over here? First you discourage. I mean, is it simply, I know, so the simple answer is because we want to test them out. But what's our philosophy? All right, what's our philosophy, though, of conversion in the first place? Is this part of our objective? What is Judaism's attitude towards conversion? Is it something like we have, I mean, either or? It seems like what's happening over here doesn't fit into the either or. Either we have a positive attitude, and that's our objective. We really want to, of course, we would like for more people to become Jewish, but only if they do it for the proper reasons. Obviously, I mean, we don't want anybody to become Jewish for the wrong reason, because that's going to break down the whole system. There's no point in that. It's not good for the person. It's not good for Judaism. Or else we're opposed to it. It's not our objective. The Judaism was given to the Jews, and it's enough that we should work on Jews and to keep and perfect the system. But the rest of the world also has Torah. They have the seven Noahide laws, and that's it. But I mean, it seems to be, it doesn't seem to fit into either one of those. I don't know if that's the, because if the objective is really to, it doesn't seem like the objective, we don't encourage.
We don't go out, exactly.
I never saw a program to encourage people. They'll say, yeah, because it has to be sincere. But one second, the two don't contradict each other. It is possible to encourage people to join and still to determine to have very strict qualification if the person is sincere enough. But we don't do that. It has to come from the person. So what's it supposed to come from? Okay, that's... I'll just leave that. I'm just putting out a question. We'll come back to the... I want to go through the story and see what ideas we can deduce from the story. Of course, I want to know specifically the conversion of Rus. What motivated her to convert? I mean, you talk to converts, I'm sure. Different converts will have different stories. And you'll be able to classify them, you know. What did Yisro, what caused the Chazal is? Yisro heard. So it's an argument. What did he hear? There's a few different positions. Some say he heard about the Muhammad Amalek. Some say he heard Kriyas Yamsuf. And some say that he heard about the Matan Torah. So it's not such a... It's an argument among the rabbis. What was the underlying factor? Now, what was the nature of the conversion of Rus? That's what I want. That's the main idea that I want to take up today. And in the course of doing that, I would like to, if possible, understand the difference between Rus and Orpah. In a more categorical way. Of course, Orpah backs off. But Orpah at first came to convert, because they both, when they both said they want to return with her, returning with her meant we want to become Jewish. And we want to be with you. So originally, it would seem, and that's also from the fact that this first Shovna, going back now to 11, but Tomarnala, well let me just go through the Psukim, because you might notice a point that's of relevance here. Naomi's reaction is, and you see the greatness of Naomi. By the way, you know Chazal, how they explain the name Naomi. What is the meaning of the name? It reflects her person. Naam, pleasant, that her deeds were very pleasant. Very perfected, a pleasant kind of person that's very likable, but not just likable. Some people are likable because they just have, you know, they're fun people, but more likable as a result of her character and her perfection. Very likable kind. I mean, there's two qualities over there. Because I mean, some people have, you know, perfected personality, but they don't have that pleasantness either. It's not a criticism, but not everybody has that blend of a personality. But that personality is based upon something more than just the superficial elements.
That's what they were drawn.
Yeah. They were drawn, so then what was the difference? So, she blesses them. May God give you may God be good to you, and you'll find menucha, you'll find the security. It's a reference to a new life, you'll have a husband. What do you really need right now? You don't need me, is basically what she's saying. You see the greatness of Nami, though, because Nami apparently had a very close attachment to the girls, too. It's an interesting kind of relation, they're very close. Because you see, they cry all the time. A lot of crying going on over here. Every 5 minutes, they burst into tears. So they obviously, it was mutual, the feelings were mutual, but you see the greatness, that she wasn't affected, Nami was not affected by her emotions. It wouldn't, I mean, she's been in exile for 10 years, and these two people she's formed a relationship with, and, you know, these things are very precious. How many related close relationships do you find in life in general of this type? And she's going back to Eretz Yisrael, it's true, but she doesn't know what she's going to find. She's left the country. I don't know if she'll be welcomed with open arms. So she'd want to cling to them. And no, she's giving up her own personal emotional attachment because she knows that according to halacha, you can't do that. You can't be swayed. You can't be swayed in halacha on something that serious as to convert somebody by these emotional pressures. It's a very big factor. I mean, in fear in the rabbinic world today with all these cases that come before you, there's a lot of pressure. People meet somebody and they want to marry and it's not, and you know, they try to convince you that this person isn't doing it for marriage. You know, there's a lot of pressures. But Nami was prepared to give up her own relationship with these girls. She's sending them away. And what do you really need? You really need a husband. That's what she's referring to. May each one of you find menucha, meaning a good situation. You'll get married. You'll have a life. Each one here, isha base isha. This isha is not mother anymore. This is a husband. You'll find a good marriage and you'll be happy. That's it. This is it. In other words, our relationship, we have to accept reality. It's hard to accept these things, but certain things in life, very happy, very pleasant, but they're not meant to be forever. So that's what she's telling you. I mean, there's a lot of drama in this story. It wasn't meant to be forever, this relationship. We enjoyed it. But we have to live. You see the greatness of people. Most people can't live on this level. Most people can only follow their natural emotion. And if we feel this way, we have to be together, and then reality just gets thrown away. Here she's saying, no, reality. Let's part, we'll leave. It was a beautiful relationship, but it's over with now. It has no reality to base itself on anymore. Okay. Very moving. A lot of drama in this story. So what happens? That's Vatishak Lahen. You see, she kisses them. Vatisa'ena kolan vatifkena. And they all, a real cry. This is a good cry. You can get the feeling. It wasn't just a few tears, right? They wept because they all loved each other. And Vatomala, they said to Nah, ki itach nashiv lamech. We want to return to your nation. That's an expression of conversion. There's no problem anymore. There's no need to be separated because we're going to become Jew. So you see that arpa also, as I wanted to point out. Vatomer Nami says to them, shov na benosai, please return, my daughters. Lama teilach na'imi. Why would you go with me? Ha'odli banim v'me'ai. Do I have any children left inside of me? V'hoylechem la'nashim. So you'll have husbands. She's really hitting them now. Now she's really engaged in this serious reality talk, discouragement. And she's hitting them with something which, what's more important in your lives? You have to get, she's bringing up the emotion. This is the most important emotion. I mean, it's not just an emotion, it's a reality. I don't have any more husbands for you. You're not going to get married. That's the chance. She's not saying it openly, but you're taking a big risk over here. Shovna benosai, return. Lechna, go. Kizakanti miyos liish. Because I'm too old to get married. Kiamati yeshli tikva. And even if, it's a lot of even ifs over here. Even if I did have hope, even if through some miracle that I got married, gam hayisi halayla liish, even if I should get married tonight, and the Gami allowed to be, even if I had children, right now, I'd have children. Halehain to Saberna? Would you hope for them? In other words, I have nothing I can't give you. You're making a big mistake over here. I can't give you what you need. Other shit, you're going to wait until they grow up. It's crazy. The plan is crazy. Halehain to Agena? Would you be held back because of them? The Vilti Ayos Liish? You're going to wait? Al benosai. No, my daughters. Kimar li ma'od mikam. It's more bitter for me than for you. Ki yotza bi yad Hashem. because the hand of God has come down on me. What does that mean? It means the recognition that I've suffered greatly. Even she realizes that what happened was a result of the chait. Yeah, she suffered. I mean, it's a makkah, Rashi says. The expression of Yad Hashem is, it's used by Mitzrayim. Hinei Yad Hashem, Moshe warns that the hand of God will come down upon you. I've suffered greatly. It's more bitter for me. So...
No, Mikem,
I don't translate it that way. Mikem, more than you. My situation is worse than yours. Yeah. Not because of you.
Oh.
You're right. There is a chazakim marli Mikem bishvilchem. Because of you. Kiyota bi ubevnai ubevala yadad Hashem. I don't know if that's the plain meaning. There's an implication. There's an implication over there that, she's recognizing Siddiqadin, in other words. She's recognizing.
Her son's married.
Yeah, I know that. I don't think that's true, but I don't think, why say that openly to them now? It's very difficult to put it that way, that she said it openly. The implication. Okay. Yashkar. Now, that's I'm glad you brought that up. The Targum is translating it the way it should be translated, the way it should be read. However, as we know, it's constructed so that it lends itself to a deeper interpretation. So the way I'm learning it, she's saying that my plight is worse than yours because you want to attach yourself to me. Apparently you find, you know, it's this personal. You're really attached to me personally and you think that your life will be better. But think it through. It's just an emotion. If you think it through, your life is not. And the truth of the matter is, don't overestimate me either. I'm in a bitter state. Sometimes you attach yourself to a person because this person appears for all intents and purposes that things are going their way and I'd like to be around that person. This person's a winner. And that person... it's just an appearance. That person being honest, saying, look, I don't show it and all that, but Marley knows. You have nothing to gain. She's really... that would discourage a person also. You see, because a lot of times you're willing to put up with certain hardships because you want to be with a person. So you're willing to put up with certain hardships. But that's because you have a certain feel about the person. You know, you can get tricked by that too. You get a certain feeling about this person. Politicians are very good at that. They make you believe in them. That they have a certain magic or a charisma. She's saying, from an objective standpoint, it's not a good move. It's not a good career move for you at this point in time. And secondly, marli me'od. I mean, I'm embittered. Don't think that things are going, you know, have gone so well for me. So she's discouraging them. Okay. Now, what happens? Vatisa eno kola and vativ kena od. There you go again. So they cry again. Man, it's interesting why the Megillah records all the crying. So they cried again. Why does the Torah record the crying? It's praiseworthy because it shows that the perfected individual is not one who's devoid of emotions. It's naturally, I have mentioned that with the Torah mentioned so many times that Yosef turned aside and cried when he was dealing with his brothers. Because he was affected by the emotion, and that's part of his perfection. But then he wouldn't allow the crying to determine his behavior. So the same thing over here, that there's tremendous emotion over here. But the behavior is not determined by the crying. The behavior is determined by a different part of the individual. So then Vatishak Arpa Lachamosa, Arpa leaves. Okay? Arpa leaves, she kissed her mother-in-law. Barus Dafkaba. Barus Plunkar. So now Arpa is out of the picture. She didn't survive the first discouragement. Yeah, she took the advice. So now Nami turns to Rus. Vatomer, and she said, Hine Shavi Yavimtech. Behold, your sister-in-law has returned El Amma V'El Eloheha to her people and to her gods. She couldn't make the break. She's gone back. Again, you see, Laurie, all this does seem to strengthen the case that these people had not converted. Which she would have taken them with her if they were converted. Why would she send her back to her culture, to her family, and to our God? Shuvi achrei yevimtech. Return after your... She did
and
the right thing.
She went back.
Yeah, she do the correct thing. She's still discouraging her. In spite of all of her good qualities, she's still discouraging her. And now we have the famous declaration of Rus. Vatomer Rus al tifki bi l'ozvech. Rus said, al tiftari, Rashi says, don't pressure me. It's a very, very powerful statement. To abandon you, lo shuv me'acharayich, to turn back from going after you. Everything here is, the word you is very, very significant in every expression over here. Ki elasha telchi eilech, wherever you go, I will go. Uvasher tolini olin, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Ameich ami, your people is my people. Velokayich elokai, and your God is my God. That's not enough. Basher to musi amos, whither thou diest, how you die, it's not clear. I will die. Vishon akaver, your manner of death. I don't know what she's talking about over here now. What does that mean? I'm going to die the way you die. Vishon akaver, and I'll be buried there. My goodness. How far does it go? Ko yaser Hashem li v'cho Yosefs. Thus shall God do to me, and thus shall he do. It's like a death and oath already. When a person talks that way. May God do whatever unto me. Ki amaves yafrik b'ni v'necha. Only death will separate between me and you. Ooh, that's it. Then, vatera. Then she sees something, and then she relents. Vatechta. Now, that's what I'd like to analyze. As I said, what is so unique about the conversion of Rus? The truth of the matter is, it doesn't seem to me, at least on the surface, I don't see what is so great about the conversion of Rus. This is established as the model, and it's not clear. I mean, usually when you're talking about somebody who's converting for the right reasons, you're thinking about someone who's been exposed, who studied Torah, ideas, knowledge, learning. That's what you say, mitzvos, and has discovered, has seen the light, right?
She met three Jews, and two of them died.
She met three Jews, actually four Jews.
No, he was dead by the time they got there.
I'm sorry?
The father was dead by the time.
Oh, was that the case? But you're right. The main thing seems to be that she has this tremendous attachment to Naomi. That's what it seems to be. The whole thing seems to be because of this tremendous attachment to Naomi. And Naomi was a wonderful person. And everything seems to, because she says that nothing, it doesn't seem to be really that Judaism seems to be the focus for her. It just happens to be that I want to be with you. Right? And because I want to be with you, so then I'll accept whatever I have to accept. That's the way you would, right? Isn't that the impression that the story is making on you? It doesn't seem to be that she's inherently attracted to Judaism. It comes, it's not even the first thing. Where you go, everything seems to flow from where you go, I will go. Alright, so if you go to shul, so I'll go to shul. But that's only because that's where you're going. That's the whole thing. And your God. You'll be my God. Why? Because it's your God. Now, this is being presented to us as the model, and as I say, it doesn't seem to me to be the... at least on the surface, what I would consider to be the highest level. Usually the stories you hear is somebody somebody came to your house, or somebody came to a class, and they asked questions, and you presented the ideas, and they never realized that Judaism makes sense, and how deep it is, and how insightful it is, and something along those lines. It seems to be that's the model, but that's not what's being presented over here. Okay. Very fascinating pasuk in Veschanan. A very important idea, but it's something which if you look around in the Jewish world today, I don't think you find this too frequently. And the pasuk says like this. This is in Devarim Perek Dalad, pasuk Vav actually, but we'll start from Hey. where Moshe says to the Jews, Ve'eli marti eschem chukim mishpatim, behold, I've taught you statutes and judgments, kasher tivani ad Hashem Elokai, as the Lord my God commanded, lasos came to perform them, bekerav aretz, in the midst of the land, asher atem boim shama l'rishta, that you are coming there to inherit. Very important. The whole philosophy of the whole purpose of Eretz Yisrael. Now, Ushmartem Vasisem, and you shall guard them and perform them. Kihichach Maschem Uvinaschem Li'eni Amim. Because this is, why shall you guard them and keep them? Because this is your wisdom. This is your wisdom and your discernment in the eyes of the nations. Asha Yishmo and Eskalachukama Ela, who will hear all of these statutes, the Amru, and they will say, Rak Am Chacham V'Navon Hagaya Gadalazeh. But only, this is only a, what a wise and discerning nation is this great nation, this great people. Now, what's the concept that this is teaching us? It's a very important idea. That the ultimate, right? Yeah, do you see that? Did you ever see that in any situation where people observe the Jews, people observe the Jewish community, and they walk away with this idea, what a wise... Does this phenomenon occur? I mean, today we have an opportunity... We're not persecuted in America. We have freedom. We have exchanges between Jews. Jews get a chance to be together with the Gentiles, vice versa. Gentiles witness... what Jews do. I would say like this, that there's two kinds. Well, this is a very important topic.
It does happen, but the thing is that it takes an objective person to notice it and to know,
Well, that's a good point. There's two things. They're very good points. That's true. Yeah. This is not happening too frequently, but Marion is saying the reason why we have to find out why it's not happening. The Torah is saying something. Right, the Torah is saying that something should happen. The Amru, when the Jews keep the right, when we keep it, when the Jews keep the right, there's a cause and effect here. When the Jews keep the mitzvot, this is what's going to happen. You're going to have the Amru, but it's not happening. Okay, now why isn't it happening? Now it can't be because we're not keeping it, because there is a large segment. There's a lot of Torah observance in the Jewish world today. It's not that there aren't, and even in those places where it's being kept, it's not producing, and even when it's being filmed on television, different groups doing their thing, religious groups, Orthodox groups, I don't think the reaction is, wow, I'm Chacham V'Navon. Now, you could say it's because of the defect in the Gentile. The Pasuk doesn't seem to indicate that. The Pasuk doesn't seem to take into consideration the factor of prejudice. Well, maybe a little bit of prejudice, but I'd say that there's two sides to this coin. This pasuk is coming to teach us something. I'd say that there's two kinds of Judaism. There's two practices of Judaism. It's a whole new idea. There's a situation where people are practicing Judaism as a religion. It's a religion like any other religion, more or less. Religious Judaism. That's one type of a thing. That's one level. It seems to me that most people, and I'm not criticizing it, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this. It's just what I'm pointing out is that it's not the highest level. There are two kinds of Judaism. There's one which is basically based upon adherence to the system. It could be scrupulous, be very careful, but it's basically a religious expression. It's a religious phenomenon, and that also can produce. See, this pasuk is talking about Kiddush Hashem, to sanctify the name of God. On this level, it is possible. It's possible to perform a Kiddush Hashem. But what I want to say is that there's two kinds of Kiddush Hashem, two kinds of sanctification of God. For example, as you know, we've discussed this many times, that how a religious person behaves is very important in ordinary situations. You know, if you show consideration for somebody, when a religious person is involved in some kind of a scandal, or even if it's it just has the appearance of being wrong or whatever it is, it's a chilul Hashem, it desecrates the name. On the other hand, if someone is stranded on the road looking for help and a car, yeshiva guys come by, they're wearing yarmulkes, they get out and they help and they fix the flat tire and all that, that's a Kiddush Hashem, just because they were wearing yarmulkes. Okay, why? Because it it casts Judaism in a very good light. People say, well, wow, these people are good people. And why are they associated with them? They're religious, they're Jews, and they do nice deeds. That's a very important thing. That's a very important thing, by the way, for everybody to always be aware of. And that is that, I mean, I'm not saying that the only reason you do a good deed is so people will think highly of Judaism. I mean, sometimes they don't know that you're Jewish, so it won't have that effect. But in many situations where it's known, where people know that you're Jewish, and especially even among other Jews, where they know that you're religious, and your behavior is such, especially in terms of kindness, so it's a tremendous mitzvah. It sanctifies the name of God. But I'm saying that's not the highest level of sanctification. Because in that case, it doesn't really demonstrate the uniqueness of Torah. That's what people expect of a religious. They'll say, yeah, he's a religious person. And a religious person is one who is considerate, who has the fear of God, who isn't that selfish, who cares about others. These are general things, and the same type of things they would say about other people who are religious, who do nice things. You know what I'm saying? So it is a Kiddush Hashem, because they will associate it with Judaism. It'll get people to think positively of Judaism, but it's more of a generic type of a thing. The highest level of Judaism is when a person lives his life, he fulfills mitzvot in a way which reflects the Chachmas Hashem. That's the essence of Judaism is not just a system of behavior. It's not just a system of behavior. The Ram says that's what we tell the person who's accepted him, he's about to convert, that he should realize that the ultimate level of Olam Haba is only for somebody who's living their life in accordance with Chachma. That the whole essence of all of the statutes and the mitzvot and everything God gave us is to perfect ourselves. Perfect ourselves in terms of what? Extracting the Chachmas HaTorah. That's a completely different level of behavior. That's the Amru. It's true. You may have people that are mean spirited, that are anti-Semitic, that won't acknowledge it. But that's not the real problem. It seems to me, the main cause of the fact that we don't have the Amru, Rakam Chacham, is because most Jews are not practicing the Judaism of Chacham. Most Jews are practicing the Judaism, which is a religious type of a thing. And I remember, for example, because this type of a yahadus can only be achieved, it's not easy. This is in few amelim b'torah. This requires a lot of effort, a lot of diligence. It doesn't come naturally. You see? So you can be a good Jew, you can be a kind Jew, and so on and so forth, but it'll never reach this level that it's going to cause people to be amazed at the wisdom of Judaism. And I remember on a Donahue show a few years ago, he had different religious, you know, one of these, there was different, his point was just to show, very religious people who cling to old-fashioned ways in modern society, something like that. So he had, from the back, a Mormon, he had this one, he had that, and he had a Hasidic family there too. And he was very, it seemed to me that he was very, on a personal level, very attached to the Hasidic. You had three, you had the grandfather and grandmother, and then you had the son and the daughter, then you had the grandchildren. Three generations of Hasidic. And he was talking to all the different groups, to try and understand why they live their life this way. And he was talking to the main spokesman in the Hasidic group was the grandfather. He was a lively guy with a good personality and friendly. And Donnie, you could tell, he really took to him. But he was interviewing his daughter-in-law. And she's got her head covered and all that, and he's asking her about, and he wasn't intending to be aggressive, it didn't strike me that way, and he started to ask her about the laws of separation, and the need on that thing, in a general way, and like, what's the reason for that? And in a matter of fact, what's the reason for that law, that you're separate? And she just, she had nothing to say. She just was really, like, she doesn't know. And it was sort of like a embarrassing pause. Then the grandfather came in and he said, well, you have to understand, Phil, that in our society the girls don't study. So here's an opportunity. And he didn't lose respect, he didn't make fun out of it. He respected these people. He respected them for the fact that they have a family structure and the children are well behaved and people are respectful. He respected them for that. But the Kiddush Hashem, if she could have explained the idea behind it, in a way that really made sense to people, the beauty of this way of life, that didn't come through. The real beauty, only, in other words, whatever niceness came through was the same niceness that more or less came through from the other families. You see? What you have was people that cling to certain very strict forms of behavior. They're able to control their impulses, and they live according to tradition. They're living a traditional way of life, which they really haven't questioned. But as a result of this, they're able to raise children properly, and they're free from all of the hazards of contemporary society, all the craziness. Okay, so that's nice, but I don't think anybody in the audience would have said, wow, this is a wise people. You see the chachma, you see the wisdom. That's the real key, in my opinion, that this is what the whole purpose, the Torah over here is telling you, this is the objective that you should strive for. The objective that you should strive for in your practice of Judaism is to discover the wisdom, and not just to discover it. Because here's where Laurie's point is very, very important. Insofar, well, what do we care? What do I care that the Amru, Rakam Chacham, why did the Pasuk have stopped over there? Ushmartem aski chachmaschem uvinaschem. This is your wisdom. This your God gave you a system of wisdom. You're fortunate. What do you mean, le'enei ha'am, the eyes of the nation? Who cares about that? What difference does it make? And what do I care that they'll hear and they'll say, Rak am chacham v'nava, no, God loves that. Why is that so? Because that is the ultimate purpose. The ultimate purpose is to perfect yourself, but God is concerned about the rest of the world as well, that they shouldn't live in darkness. Yeah, but how do you relate to the rest of the world? The Torah was given to the Jews, and was given only to the Jews. But what about the rest of the world? How are they supposed to relate to Torah? Now, Lori made a good point. People, given the way man is by nature he's not going to be attracted to abstract ideas. There's no we don't know of any philosophical society, except, and we're struggling to become it's a religious philosophical people. The only way is when you encounter an individual who you're amazed by because of his perfection, but there's more to it, you see? That's the question. You can be attracted to various personalities, but the question is, she was a charismatic type of a person, obviously. ARPA, what's the difference between ARPA and between NAMI? See, they both were very much attracted to the personality of Naomi, and they wanted to emulate her.
Ruth saw the idea.
Yeah, but Ruth saw that there's something beyond it. That all of her perfection and all of her goodness, everything, all of her pleasantness, you see, was not just an expression of a personality, but it stemmed from a system. She could sense that there was something beyond that. Yeah, that this is not just something that she herself has developed. And for ARPA, it was an emotional attachment to the person. It was an emotional attachment to the person. And that's exactly... Now, the task of Naomi was to be able to decipher, to set up a test. She set up a test to discover which one was, you see, I think of it in contrast, Lehavdil, the other way around. It only reminded me that when you see the other way around, by Mordechai, when Mordechai resisted, his expression of resistance, his greatness, that he would not yield to the concept of the deification. When Haman noticed it, Haman knew it wasn't just something in the person himself. See, he was a smart guy, Haman. Of course, for evil. You see the point, the illustration on the side of evil. Yeshno Amecha, there's a nation. What am I going to gain by just killing Vayivas Bienim? What am I going to gain by just killing this woman? He knows that there's something more, there's something bigger. There's something very, very big over here. Of course, he hated that thing and he wanted to destroy it. But nevertheless, he noticed that there's something bigger. And that's what the test was all about. So if it's basically just an emotional attachment to a particular person, but there's no recognition that there's something much bigger behind it, so then all she had to do was to evoke all of the sacrifices. There's other emotions. This is not the only emotion. That's why she brings up all the other factors. Go back to your home. You're going to miss mom. You're not going to see your mom anymore. You're going to have to separate from your family. All these things are very powerful. You're going to have to separate from your nation, from your people, and You're not going to have a guy. Yeah, it's going to be tough. You're not going to be first, you know, the first pick over there when you go back to Eretz Yisrael. When she evoked all these things, so she cried. She cried, but that was a crying because of emotion. And then she left. And then she turned to Russ, because she didn't know yet. She didn't know what the depth, the full depth of Russ, what was Russ all about. And then Russ expressed herself. Russ was different. Russ was attracted to her, not because of the personality per se, but because she sensed that there was something behind what caused her to be this way. She sensed that this person was living according to a certain system of ideas, of knowledge. There was something tremendous, and that's, she couldn't live without that. She wanted to, she was attached to, it's true, that the conversion came about. That's why what Lori is saying is correct. That's why Chazal, I'll point out now, every statement that she made has significance on the ordinary level, but it's an implication of halacha. See, where you go, I will go. So Chazal say that's a reference, and I won't go. I'll go just me, and I won't go beyond she taught her about Shabbos. Because that's true. You can't just accept. You can't just accept the person to convert if they don't know about Torah and mitzvot. You've got to tell them about Torah and mitzvot. So that's clear. But the emphasis of the pasuk is not so much on the mitzvot, it's on the motivating factor behind it. You see, what caused it to be attracted to it. That's why each one of these statements indicates a different element of the perfection of Yadis. I realize that you didn't get to be the way you are just accidentally, because you got a great personality, or because of certain emotions. This is too much. She saw. She was able to sense that underlying perfection. That's why it's very important. There's two things. The point that you made before, Marion. It's very important the person strive to be a role, you know, in terms of perfecting themselves. That's something you have in mind. That when you truly live in accordance with the proper ideas of Torah, so then you become a source of attraction to others. It's also important to find the other person, though, when you encounter. You also have to know when you encounter an individual who has these qualities to be able to sense those qualities and to cling to that person. That's part of the mitzvah. See, that's why the conversion is really reflects that the mitzvah of Uvos and Bokum. She really clung to God. But what does the Chazal say? The mitzvah is, and you shall cling to God. Uvos and Bokum, to cling to God. So Chazal asks, how is it possible to cling to God? God is a consuming fire, and we can't cling to God. We have no, God is not physical, God is not God is, we don't even know God. So what does it mean, Chazal say? No, to cling to Talmid Chacham. The mitzvah is, that's a mitzvah. That is a mitzvah, say, to cling, and the Rambam explains what the particulars, to set up a business connection with the Talmid Chacham, because by setting up a connection, he's an individual that reflects the true ideas that come from the system that God has given to us. You see? So by clinging to the right people, you are in touch with the system of ideas that's affecting them. That's exactly the conversion of those. Okay, yes?
That's a very good point.
And she was almost an half sober.
That's good. That the most people's pleasantness is just an emotional thing, so therefore when it's necessary to be tough, they can't be tough. But her pleasantness was a result of her perfection, and therefore there's a time to use it and there's a time not to use it. That's a very good point. But in the course of what you were saying, it just Verus Dafkaba.
Yeah,
it used the exact same expression. That's the mitzvah to cling. She clung to her, and that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to cling to Talmid Chacham, and that's a fulfillment of the obligation to cling to God. Now you could see the what's going on. Well, what's her declaration saying? What does it mean? I mean, it seems like a lot of excessive description. Where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Well, what do these things mean? Your people is my people. You see, all of these, I would say in a word, what is it, an expression? Complete identification. It's total identification. Each one is a separate idea. Wherever, what's my place? Most people have a sense of where they want to be. You see, which is based upon some emotional attraction. No, my place is wherever you decide to be. It's philosophically determined. Where you lodge, it's one thing. You see, it's one thing to go. That's referring to what you're going to be involved in. Where, but at night I like to have my own comforts. Lodging to me implies, you know, certain comforts, a certain lifestyle. That's, you know, your home. No, whatever. Wherever, that's my lifestyle. Whatever your lifestyle is. Your nation, that means she has to give up her whole nation. But that's what you're saying. For me, nation is not just an emotional thing of who I happen to grow up with. Your nation. Elokayach, your God. Chazal point out, all these things indicate, we can go through these specifics. I don't know how I have enough time today to go through all the specifics. Of course, one indicates Tchum Shabbos. Let me just tell you what they are now. You can think about it. Basically, on the deeper level, Rashi says we can infer from Rus's answer, we can infer what Nami said to her. Okay? So, where you go, I will go, is a reference to Tchum Shabbos. Funny, you would think to Shabbos itself. Tchum Shabbos is the boundary from whence you can't go outside of Tchum. So she's accepting upon herself Tchum Shabbos. That's a little bit strange, because you'd think the most important thing to accept upon yourself would be the Malachos of Shabbos. Okay, we can explain it, but I'm just mentioning it now. I don't know if I'll have time today. And then, Kasha, what's the implication of where you lodge, I will lodge? Yichud. Yeah, lodging, we have a different set of laws. You see, you can't just be together, be alone, secluded with anybody. There's Isurei Yichud. That means to say that even if you're not engaged in a sexual relationship, but the laws go so far that you can't even be secluded together. You know, like, why is that? Why is that the factor? And what's the next thing? Oh yeah, Amech, your nation is my nation. So Rashi says that means we're different, we have a system of Taryag Mitzvahs. We subscribe to a system of Taryag. We're different than other nations, we have Taryag Mitzvahs, totally different. All right, and then Bashetom Musi Amos, I would. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, that one is the easiest one. Yeah, that means that we give up all forms. Of course, you have to accept the Jewish God. How can you convert without that? No, but it means not just accepting the idea, but every way in which we relate to God. Give up all the superstitions. See, all of the crazy ideas that people have. Perfection. In terms of removing yourself from all false ideas that people have in terms of relating to God. That's what the Elokayach. Not just the fact that you accept one God, but how you relate to God in the most perfected way. She did not directly go to God. It wasn't like Avraham Avinu. It wasn't someone who was pursuing the truth per se. It was someone who had seen an individual who manifested the perfections. You see? And that's how she arrives. She arrives at the idea of God. But the idea of God over here is, of course, God. Of course she believes in God. No, it means the perfected notion of God. But most people would think it really doesn't matter. It's a good point. See, most people, of course, I'm going to you believe in God. Of course you believe in God. But she's making a more significant declaration, because most people think, as long as you believe in God, what's the thing? That's what all people think. That's what people believe. They were this religion, that religion. You believe in God, or you believe in God. Does it matter? Why is it so important to emphasize these things, that you can't pray to an intermediary, you can only pray directly to God, and you have to avoid every type of manifestation of any type of superstition, and you believe in God. The answer is, no, that's very important. The most important thing of all is not just the fact that you believe in God, but the character of that belief and how it affects you, how you relate to God. To free yourself of idolatry. It's a very, very significant thing. And the subtle forms of idolatry, which have crept into Judaism, and you know what I'm talking about, all these strange mystical concepts, you know, with the superstitions and the evil eye and warding off evil spirits, and all these crazy notions that people have about how one relates to God are very, very important in terms of perfection. It's not by accident. And you see, on the surface, you see that this is an expression of identification, because Bashetom Musi Amos. I mean, how far is this going to go? It's one thing to have a relationship, but every relationship has its limitations. I'll follow. What's that? Well, no, Chazal say it means that she accepts the Dal of Mises of Bezdin. In other words, she accepts upon herself. That's very important. That there's no turning back. That once you accept this system, you can die if you buy it. How far are you willing to accept it? You can't try it out and decide, well, it's too tough for me, you know. Well, this Shabbos I'll keep, the next Shabbos I won't. I mean, she's, you know, she's telling her all the consequences. But on the plain level, it means how far are you prepared to go with this person? There's a lot of close relationships, but we have to part company. You know, you're going off into the wilderness. It's dangerous. I'm not prepared to go there, you know. Right? I'm not going to follow you into the wilderness. Wherever you go, I'll go. Even if it means up to death. Whatever you decide is necessary. In other words, she's willing to give up her entire life. And Meshameh Kaver. That's significant too. Because in a person's mind, where they're buried. See, it's interesting. Having said all this, it seems trivial. Who cares where you're buried? No, but sometimes a person...
People
live their entire lives in America, but they want to be buried in Israel. Where a person is buried is significant. It's making a statement. It happens to be a psychological reality. That he's made, and it's a mitzvah, by the way. There is a mitzvah of Tfura. It's a kiyum of Tfura in Eretz Israel. Because even if you didn't live there, but you're showing that that's what I always regarded as my ultimate destiny. You're tying yourself up to the destiny of that place. And that's significant for all those that strengthens the place. Not in the mystical way. I don't mean in the mystical way. In a practical way. All right. I'm just going in a general way. Now, Vatera ki misametes hi laleches. You see, she saw that she was determined. Misametes. She was very determined. Lalechas ita to go. Vatechta ladavere. Then you got to keep going. Then she sees... At that point, you're not allowed to discourage a person. See? So what is the real philosophy over here? What's the real philosophy? It seems to me that the real philosophy of Yonatus is, it's not our objective to necessarily encourage people in a direct kind of a way. Yonatus, the way it pictures the Nizam, God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, and Yadis can relate. Since Yadis is the ultimate perfection for man, God didn't cut off the Gentiles. But how is it supposed to relate? It seems to me that the only way it's supposed to relate to the Gentiles is through us, through the perfection of the Jewish personality. And the Gentile who is honest, who is sincere, will be attracted, will realize that there's something different, there's something unique, there's something beyond. This person reflects something which is beyond the ordinary. It's a system of ultimate truth. He'll recognize from this person that this person is living according to a system of ultimate truth, and he'll investigate it, and once he investigates and he sees what it is, then you can't turn it down. When the person is in that, you've eliminated, you have to test. You don't know why he wants to be Jewish. Who knows? There could be motivation. People want to get married to this, maybe it's that reason, maybe it's the other. It could be any kind of reason. So you don't know. But once you subject him to the pride like she did, and then you discover what the real reason is, that this person has discovered that this is the ultimate truth, then you can't deprive him. You have no right to deprive him. You have to give him the... it's almost like, it reminds me like when a Rebbe, the obligation upon a Rebbe. How many times does he have to explain the point to the students?
Oh, yeah.
How many times?
Even
100 times. Don't push me.
Did you explain?
I'm just going to say this once.
Did you explain?
I'm only going to make the point that you have to explain 100 times. I'm only going to say it once. Okay? But the point is, and if the students, see, a student can't be, there's a chiyuv and a student too, man, you see? You can't be embarrassed either. Well, I'll buy something. There's two things. There's an obligation upon the student to ask the question. You can't just say, well, it wasn't fair, and that's it, goodbye. But if the Rebbe's getting a little upset, because he's explained it 55 times, he's still not understanding. And he's sort of, he's getting a little upset. So then what are you supposed to say? Torah hi, v'luma nani tzara. And that's your ticket. It is Torah, v'luma, I need to learn. You can't deprive me of my necessity. You are a Rebbe, you have Torah. Once you have it, you have no right to deprive me of my Torah. It seems to be the same type of thing over here. If a Gentile should find themselves in that situation, that this is it, I discovered that this is the God's truth, and I have to live in accordance with this truth. So you have to give it. That's, I think, the underlying philosophy. But we do not go and try and market Judaism to the Gentiles. That's not the way it was intended to be. And I'm not even going to explain why at this point. It doesn't seem to be, we don't go and market it.
Even
promote
Jews
it.
Either.
Amongst Jews, we do mark it.
Oh, we do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because amongst Jews, they have to. Jews, since Jews are commanded.
No, I didn't mean it that way.
They were
like
designated.
And all that stuff.
Oh, no, that's how you mark it into something else. Yeah, I mean, that's something. I'm just using the term, obviously.
Yeah, no, mark.
No, I didn't mean to imply the method. I'm just saying, of Jews is a tremendous gift.
Yeah.
That's what we call kiruv too.
Right.
Since that person is Jewish, he's designated for this purpose. He's part of Klal Yisrael. That's the greatest chesed to bring him to Torah.
Right.
But that is not. For Gentiles, though, you are supposed to inform them about the seven Elchad laws. Seven Elchad laws, but not any attempt to get the person to convert. Just the opposite. Until we ascertain, until that person, it seems to me, it's like Ruth. She demanded it. She said, Rakham Loves. There's no way you'll ever get rid of me. That's the attitude. When a person is on that level, there's no way I can't leave this, then by tefda, then you gotta cease. Then you can't discourage them. Why? Because this is the real cause. This is the person that it was designed for. So you're not allowed to, if you, because there are ways you could possibly just say something to turn them off, then you're not allowed to. And the Rambam quotes this about tefda, she ceased. Okay? And he's focusing in on the words, because it says that you would have thought that after Yud Zion, when she makes a declaration, only death will separate between me and you, right? So that should have been it. Then it should have said, okay, Vatechta al Dabila, right? But the puzzle says Vatera, she saw that she was like forcing herself to go, like she was exerting some kind of a force there. So what is the significance of that? So he deduces a very interesting lesson, which I want to share with you. He says like this, that a person, of course, he says, has a Yetzer Hara and a Yetzer HaTov, the good inclination and the evil inclination. And he says that the Yetzer HaTov only advises the person to do good, to do the mitzvah, the good inclination. However, the Yetzer Hara tries to convince him to do sins, averos. Now, that's its first line of attack. Now, if it sees that it can't win him over, that the person resists, then it tries to seduce him to do a mitzvah, which is disguised by many averos. You understand what I'm talking about? In other words, very often a person has a desire to do great things, you know, people, I mentioned, like politicians are always doing it for the public good, right? Always, but you know, once you're looking behind it, that public good has a lot of personal gain involved, whether it be money, whether it be influence, position, and so forth, and it's a mitzvah. And the truth of the matter is that many people, the more you think about it, many people that are serving the public, and even in the religious field, we know, not every person who's a rabbi is necessarily a tzaddik. A lot of people are attracted because of right, personal factors. It could be the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is expressing itself through mitzvahs. Get out. So he says that when the Yetzer Hara is very sneaky. It can't get him to do an Avera. So then it'll try and get him to do the Avera in the disguised form of a mitzvah. That's why you gotta be very careful. You have to analyze yourself. So now he says like this. And he says that's how it grows in power. He quotes Chazal. I'm not going through the entire statement. Listen to the. Let me just explain the point. Now, if that's the case, how does a person know when he's doing the mitzvah? How do you know if he's doing it because of the Yetzer HaTov, the good, or the Yetzer Hara? So he says like this: when if a person wants to test himself. At the time comes to do a mitzvah. If he's doing it because of the evil inclination, or not, he should make a test. Now, I'll give you the two sides, and you tell me which is which. Because sometimes when a person has to do a mitzvah, so he could have two different emotional reactions. Either he could feel very, like there's a mitzvah to be done, there's somebody who needs help. You know, we talk about this poor woman needs help, assistance, so on and so forth. We're getting a group together to do her shopping for her and clean up her house. So there are two possible reactions that a person can have to any kind of a mitzvah. One is where, you feel tremendous resistance. I don't feel like doing it. I'm not in the mood to do it. I would like, What can I do? All right, you know, that's one thing. Tremendous amount of resistance. Okay, I see that we're all familiar with that. On the other hand, sometimes a mitzvah, you hear about a mitzvah that has to be done, and everybody's running when you feel tremendous enthusiasm to do the mitzvah. Okay, we're having a big simcha, whatever the case may be, whatever the tremendous reaction. So he says like this. He says, if at the time of the mitzvah, if his limbs are shaking and moving, right? With his rezus, he has rezus, he has this tremendous enthusiasm, and he's shaking, and the excitement to do the mitzvah, you know, like you've noticed certain people have this tremendous excitement about doing the mitzvah. They're all worked up about it. Oh yeah. If that's the case, he says, Nistamahi me'atzasi yetzahara. Then you can know it's from the evil inclination. If you feel this tremendous enthusiasm and your limbs and you can't wait to do it, then it's probably, He's not talking about a perfected person like Avraham Avinu. He says, because Eich Yuchalio is happy to be that the limbs of the body, the heavy limbs of the body, which come from earth, which are physical in other words, and their nature is to follow their desire, their physical desire. You see, how could it be that this suddenly should acquire a desire to do the good? It can only be because of the advice of the evil inclination. That makes, if a person has any true insight, he should be suspicious of certain things. So people, when they're all of a sudden, you know, people have been living one kind of, all of a sudden, overnight, everybody gets excited about that. You know, Baal Tshuva, the person of Baal Tshuva, and he's running to daven and jumping and shaking and everything, and people, oh, what a wonderful thing, this person has been, you know, has been moved by some spirit over here. Very, very careful, because it's not in human nature. It's not in human nature. Yeah, by the way, when he says this, it doesn't mean, by the way, he's not saying that if the motivation to do a mitzvah is from the Yetzer Hara, that you shouldn't do it. No one's saying you shouldn't do it. He's just saying, but you should know yourself. Know thyself is very important. He says, but if however, the motivation to do it is because of the desire of the soul, the inner soul, if it's coming from the desire of the inner soul to get closer to its creator through the performance of the mitzvos, he says, then the limbs of the body are going to be very heavy, and he's going to feel this tremendous weakness and laziness. You see? Therefore, In tying it in to the pasuk, it means like this. This is the implication. That she made a declaration. This is not the plain meaning of the pasuk, but it's a very brilliant insight. And then it says, Vatera ki misametzes hi lalechas. She saw that she was forcing herself to go, which meant that she had to exert pressure just to keep up with her. Now, she was much younger. Ruth was much younger than Naomi. So it should have been easy for her to keep up with her. So all of a sudden, apparently, the implication is she became weak and she had to force herself to go further. So that's what the implication, I mean, that's not the plain meaning, but the implication is she looked and she saw that this does not come from any crazy emotion. But that physically, she's weaker. It's difficult. Even though it's difficult, and she apparently had an effect upon her by telling her, it's a sober kind of a thing. Nevertheless, her mind has decided to follow it. That's the ultimate perfection. That's the test. That's an interesting idea. Because most people... Most people are looking for that other state. That state... It's very easy to confuse what people want to maintain as religious enthusiasm. It's very easy to make a mistake about that. To really attribute it to sound like this person is perfected. You got to be suspicious. I think the point to be taken is... We're not judging people one way or the other, but a person should be smart and should have a deeper insight and to realize that just because a person feels enthusiasm for a mitzvah doesn't mean that it's really stemming from his yetzer hara or that it's an expression of perfection. And even if it's not, I don't mean to say that if it's not, that doesn't mean to say that it's not a good thing. It can be a good thing, but what's dangerous is when you're confused by it. Now, what's dangerous, though, is there are many people you see, that have these types of emotions, and they mistakenly believe that they're stemming from their innate perfection, and that's why it's not good. That can give a person a very false sense of security in the religious realm. Okay. We'll pause here. I want to make it clear that the basis of the attraction was the fact that she saw a person who manifests the chokhmah, but the manifestation is not just in learning halacha. The manifestation in every aspect of her life, how she lived, how she dealt with every situation in her life, that's where you really see the chokhmah. So that's what Rus was attracted to. And as a result of that, she wants to learn those laws, and that's how you're drawn to study the Torah, to get to the source of the chokhmah. In other words, the person doesn't see the source directly. You see it as it's manifested in the life of somebody else.
What do
you see from this? To reach this perfection, a person has to study the Talmud HaMitzvot, the philosophy. By Talmud, we mean the philosophy, the underlying value of the philosophy. It's simply, you know, it seems to me impossible. For those people that maintain that the mitzvot, that we would do mitzvot, there's no point, we just do the mitzvot inherently perfected. And that there's no real, it doesn't make any difference what your understanding of the mitzvot is. Most religious people believe this. But the only thing that really matters is doing the mitzvot. And how you understand it is really of no consequence. How could you say that with this pasuk? The pasuk says that they will see you performing the mitzvot and they'll see the tremendous wisdom. Why are they going to see the wisdom? That what? That you come home from shul and you have a Sabbath meal and you wash before you eat and you eat. What are they going to see? That can't be the case. What? That comes so because you go in a hut, right? And you schlep on your stuff and you live in the hut and maybe you're sleeping. Yeah, they may not think they may think. And you tell them it's because our ancestors a few thousand years ago were in huts in the wilderness, so we do that. Whoa! Wow. I don't think that that's it. See, and the same thing with the kosher laws. You try, I mean, the truth of the matter is that that's a tough one. When I was in high school, I remember, I did not know, I had no clue as to what the meaning of any of these laws were at that time. I didn't know any philosophy, because I went to that type of a yeshiva where you just taught to keep the laws, and why? I don't know why. I guess it was there, but it was tradition, whatever. And I was working on a summer job, and I was talking to workers during lunch. Something came up about the food, you know, and I couldn't. This was that food. He was curious. So this guy was very curious, and he started asking about these kosher laws. Why can't you eat pig, and what this and that? And I, you know, like I was extremely embarrassed. I don't know what I came up with, I'm sure it wasn't good. But it was really like a terrible experience. Like here I am, following these rules, and this person asked if I didn't ask about it, okay, but he asked about it, and now I must look like a real jerk because I have no idea as to why I'm doing it. How is that, you know, if we didn't have this process, and say that okay, so I wouldn't make an issue. But the pasuk says that they will see. And what does it mean they'll see? They'll inquire. They're going to ask you. And as a result of your answers, they're going to be amazed to discover that what you're doing is based upon tremendous wisdom. Now, how can you reach that level? Aside from the fact, how can you perfect yourself in Torah if you have no idea? It's clear that the mere performance of the mitzvot, the abstentions, you see, the abstentions from the mitzvahs, or the mere performance, the truth of the matter, you really can't perform most mitzvahs properly if you don't know what they're about, if you don't study them. When you see, the Torah gives you the reasons of sukkah. Alright, it gives you the reasons of matzah. Alright, now the reason it's giving it to you on a very simple level, and as you delve deeper, I'll ask you why the Torah gives you the reason altogether. Just do the mitzvah of the meaning matzah. Well, you have to know why, because this is the bread of affliction. So there's no doubt. There's no doubt, and it's stated openly. All of you, Shon and Rashi, to study the Talmud HaMitzvot. You have to know the halachos. You have to know how to perform the mitzvot. But if you don't know why you're doing it, how is it going to affect you? It's not a magical kind of thing, and that's why the Ramban talks about the category of someone who could be a maneuver, Shatatama. That is, you could have the extreme of an individual who is meticulous. He keeps all the laws, and he lives his life like a behemoth. In the middle, like an animalistic existence. You can indulge, but today it's possible, even then, but today you can indulge in every type of it you want. And you can always find a head for it. It's doable. Believe me, it's doable. I'm not going to tell you how. But it's doable. But this person didn't violate one law. And he davened, and he put on stones. And he never missed his mantra yishma. But this person is living like an animal.
Shabbat. Kadosh and Diyur, that's Mr. Kadosh and Diyur. So your observing should be in a manner which leads to perfection. What do you mean? By observing is perfection. No, observing is not perfection.
Okay, we'll stop here.
Thank you. I just want to summarize very briefly. It all comes down to the difference we discussed last week about the uniqueness of Rus and her declaration, wherever you go, I will go, and so forth. I mean, to sum it all up, you see that what she was expressing was her absolute commitment to the truth. And I think it's a very important point. If a person... See, the different... Arpo is interested in the truth. They both had an interest in the truth. And they both recognized that she was unique. That Nami had some special body of knowledge, which was extremely important. I would say in the case of both women, it was an attraction to the truth. See, but there's a difference. For some people, the truth becomes the essence of their existence. And that means that once you embark on that path of truth, you've got to be prepared to go wherever it's going to lead you, because you're going to encounter conflicts along the way. Truth, that's a difficulty. I mean, you see that certain people start out in life idealistically or intellectually, they're searching for the truth, and then you see after a while they kind of switch their path, or they make concessions, practicality, whatever the case may be. So it's not that they don't care about the truth, but there are other things that are more important to them, right? Conflicts. And in certain conflicts, they may compromise. Compromise comes into the picture. And this is the reality. This is, in terms of conversion, the basis for conversion has to be an absolute commitment to the truth, no matter where the truth is going to lead you. And the truth is definitely going to produce conflict. The search for knowledge is going to produce conflict, an impossibility. The person is spending his life ostensibly in pursuit of knowledge, and he says it's fine, he has no conflicts whatsoever, it's an impossibility. Because with each person's emotions, he has emotions, he has attachments, he has all kinds of situations, he has desires, he has needs, he has family to support, and you see that most people who, one way or another, give up the pursuit, is basically because of a conflict which they could not overcome. And the greatness of Rus was this absolute commitment to the truth. And I think that's wherever you go, I go. Wherever you lodge, I lodge. In other words, irrelevant. Even I'm giving up all my other attachments. That's what's required. Arpa was not prepared. See, she made it. Arpa was not prepared for this. Nami made it very clear. These are the terms. These are the terms. I mean, before you convert, just be prepared. These are the terms. It's got to be an absolute commitment to the truth wherever it leads. And the truth has to be the only thing that counts, because you have to be in line with the will of God. And that's when Rus made that declaration, and it refers to just about every type of attachment one can have. Wherever you lodge, so Chazal say, the laws of Yichud, the romantic, the sexual, whatever it is, family, nation, religion, she hit upon every powerful emotion. And she, her family, she's giving up her family, all of this, she recognizes that point, that there's no such thing, but I can't do it because it's going to hurt so-and-so, but I can't do it because of that, what that person will think, or because of my job, or because, you see, you can't answer that way, because if you're prime purpose in life is to be in line with the truth, then that comes first, and that everything else is secondary to it. That's a very important lesson. I mean, it's very practical. I mean, for everybody, for us. Of course, each person on his own level. I mean, nobody's perfect, and certainly nobody's perfect on day one. All right. So I don't mean to discourage anyone. We all falter, but that idea. We may falter. We may have setbacks. We may, you know, give in at certain points, but the ideal, we should never distort an ideal just because of our own weaknesses. Weaknesses can be tolerated. I mean, we're all human, and you have to understand how to deal with the weakness. But that's different. It's one thing to admit a weakness. It's another thing to distort the concept and to say that there's no such thing, which contemporary society does, and says there is really no such thing as truth. That's basically what the philosophy on of the prevailing society is today. That there really is no such thing as truth. So then it's just a question of what's pleasant. You know, you got to allow for everybody's view. You know, you can't be offensive to people and so on and so forth. That's totally false. The primary idea of Yonatus is that there is a truth and that man can know this truth and that his perfection lies in the extent to which he can be in line with this truth. And the attitude has to be that that's it. Once the truth takes precedence over every other attachment. That's what the Rus expressed. That's why her conversion represents the ultimate. Okay. That's just another twist on the point. I thought it was very important. I think it's very practical. Especially for, ourselves. Especially for young people when they're starting out in life. And to all people at this stage of your life, the truth is extremely important. But then you know that as you go along, other factors come into the picture. And then, truth is one of those things. You know, it plays a role in your life, but family plays a role in your life, and success plays a role in your life, and you have a lot of different things in your life, and truth is one of them. But that's not the way it can be. I mean, truth has to be the ultimate. That's the objective around which everything else flows. So, what can I do? Anyways, let's continue now. What happens next is very fascinating, and it's the kind of thing you can easily pass over. It's a very touching kind of the story is very touching emotionally. So when I first read it, I was touched by it emotionally, but I didn't really see any point to it other than that. But I want to read it to you now. Because a little story, and bear in mind that you know that the Torah, Tanakh, etc. is very sparing in terms of detail, historical detail, informational. It's not informational, whatever it's recorded is for a point. They return, so as we left off last week, we're in Perek Aleph, and now we're up to Pasuk Yates. That's the point where Naomi recognizes that Rus has the proper attitude for conversion. Then it says that the two of them went, then they traveled together, Shtehen, Vatelachna Shtehen, Adbawana Beis Lacham, until they arrived at Beis Lechem. Now they're back in Israel, Beis Lechem. Bethlehem. Well, it's still part of Israel. So it remains that way. Okay. And it was when they came to Beis Lechem that there was a tumult, a teum, the whole kol ha'ir, the entire city was astounded concerning them. And they proclaimed, is this Naomi? So the Megillah records for us the return. It seems like not such an important, what the newspapers had that day. You know, Naomi returns with daughter-in-law. I mean, like, who cares, But nevertheless, it really made an impression. And why did it make such an impression? As we've explained, because they were significant people. He was a very big guy. Elimelech and Naomi, they were very prominent people. So now they return. When they returned, there was a big event. And they said, Hazos Naomi. Naomi's back. Wow. And then, Vatom Raleyan, and he said to them, Al Tikrenali Naomi. Don't call me Naomi. Krenli Mara. Call me Mara. Mara means bitter. The one who's bitter. Naomi is pleasant. It's a happy, it's a positive name. So it's, it's a very upbeat kind of name. Naomi. She says, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Ki heimar shakai li ma'od. Because God has dealt very bitterly with me. And I said, my matzav is not Naomi. That shouldn't be my name. If you were going to name me today, it would be Mara. Very bitter. Ani malaya halachti. I left filled with everything. Filled. I was filled with everything. I had everything. So you see that they lost everything. They were very wealthy people. This is what we said. And the reason why they left was because they wanted to preserve their wealth. You see how, when a person is thinking emotionally, the calculation, it's contrary to the whole idea of tzedakah, because we say that aser to aser, that you should give in order to deish at this aser, that you'll become wealthy. As a result of giving tzedakah, you become wealthy. And that's the way of God. But they didn't follow it. They left with wealth. They followed their emotions, and And I came back empty-handed. It's not just the money. She left with the husband. She left with two sons and with everything they had. And she's broken. She's lost her husband. She's lost her two sons. And she's lost her wealth. So it's a very bitter thing. Lama tikrena li nami. Why would you call me nami? Vadoshem onobi. Vishakai herali. God has testified about me, concerning me. And God has punished me. He's punished me, brought misfortune upon me, whatever, however you want to translate it. And then it says, Vatoshav Nami, the Virus of Moaviah. And Nami returned, and Rus the Moaviah, Kalasa, her daughter-in-law, Ima. Hashavim is De Moav, who had returned from the fields of Moab. This is transitional now. This is not part of the declaration, because this is leading us into the next phase of the story. This season, it was the season of the reaping of the barley harvest. But let's analyze. What's the point? What was the purpose? What does this tell us about Nami? Seems like, why did she say that? When they greeted her and they said, this is Nami, why did she have to say that? Don't call me Nami. Call me Mara. I've been embittered. Was she saying it because she was expressing her anger with the situation? Was it it just seems out of character with a person to whom we're looking up to as being a tzaddikus. It has to have some kind of a purpose. Was it just her emotions? It could be just an emotional thing. Or was she just looking for sympathy? Why is she saying, and if so, why is it being recorded? I mean, a person, I can understand on a human level that, you know, it can happen, but the Torah doesn't record everything that, we don't know all the conversations that took place, every emotional reaction of a person that takes place, and it's impossible. The Torah is not a history book, it's not a biography. So there must be something significant over here. Is it something positive? Is it something negative? Could be that there's a flaw here, that she was bitter. Did this change her and make her a bitter person? So I'm just asking. Until now, I just really didn't think too much into it. You know, because it's something which you can identify with. It goes with the flow. It doesn't create a problem. When you read it, yeah, you know, you feel for her. Never. Because it wasn't really at her instigation. She has to go along because her husband made the decision. So she didn't contest it. And she suffered. But she suffered, and she said that God punished her, even though she didn't initiate, but she was part of it. And that's the way life is. That a person can experience negative punishment, even if they're not the direct cause of the calamity. That we know. It's being part of a tzibur. Being part of, sometimes a tzibur is deserving of a punishment, and even the innocent ones will be punished as a result of it. That's part of the reality of life. Not everybody is guaranteed that his own deeds will be sufficient to save him. Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't, but there will be situations where, because of your association with others, you'll suffer the consequences that were brought about because of their evil. She seems to be Nebuch the innocent one. It's not her fault, but nevertheless she's suffering. And she comes back to them and she's got to tell them this. What's the point? That's my question. All right, Lena Rivka, did you want to say something? She did mention it before. She did mention it before about the bitterness. I didn't really bring it into this context because there I thought she was trying to discourage. She said, why would you cling to me? You know, there I understood it. Because she's trying to discourage Russ from staying with her. So she's saying, what practical benefit? What do you think, you know, are you going to get from me? God has dealt harshly with me. My matzav in life is not a great one. So there I can understand why she would say it. There's a different reason. I would assume it's a different reason. Here, what's the reason? What do you have to tell everybody here? You know, usually we say, keep it to yourself. People don't. It's contrary to the natural.